This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Hey, stay sharp.
Glad to have you with us today, as always. Leprechaun Lunch at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyers, and today, for the second time, we are coming to you live from Four Winds Casino, South Bend, inside the Kankakee Grill. Got a nice little crowd on hand here.
Hey! Yeah, all right.
Lunchtime crowd, and we've got green hats all over the place. And if you haven't made your way out here yet, hopefully you are on your way. We are giving away the limited edition green Shamrock WSBT baseball caps just in time for tomorrow's college football playoff and the Cotton Bowl between Notre Dame and Clemson, which, of course, you'll hear right here on 96.1 WSBT. And we've got Jesse on hand. He is signing people up for a chance to win that DeWalt portable radio. We will be giving that away at the end of today's show. So you sign up, fill out a registration slip to win that. But all you have to do is show up and you get one of the cool green baseball caps from WSBT. How you doing today, Evan?
Pretty good. You doing all right?
Doing great. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did. Very relaxing.
Yeah.
Do I look relaxed?
You do look relaxed.
Right. How's my hair look? Looking good?
I was going to say something.
There's a little sea salt spray in it right now.
You've got a little bit more product than I have. There's a little more need for product than mine. So we'll just leave it at that. But again, so you can stop out here, Four Winds Casino, South Bend, get one of the green Shamrock caps. Of course, we've got the Cotton Bowl. It is finally almost here. We are just a little bit more than 24 hours away. And I'll just run through tomorrow's game day schedule. You and I were just talking about it.
Yeah, it's going to be.
There are a little bit of moving parts going on with tomorrow's schedule, a little bit more than usual. So, first, I'll mention we've got an extended edition of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tonight. We will start at 4 o'clock. Darren Pritchett and I, Eric Hansen, will be on hand. As always, we've got some different guests. Brian Driscoll will join us from down in Dallas. We'll talk to him about the game and some other guests as well. So that's from 4 until 7 tonight. Tomorrow, game day, you and Tim Growl are on at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. You guys are very excited about that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll have the coffee ready to go.
That's absolutely right.
Lots of it.
And your special guest from Dallas, joining you from Dallas, a former Notre Dame and Indianapolis Colts player, current head orthopedic physician for the Fighting Irish, Brian Rattigan, whose son, Connor, one of the two preferred walk-ons who signed with Notre Dame last week. Also, Bobby Brown, former Irish receiver in Dallas, and former Clemson defensive end Raheem Abdullah. So those guys are going to be on together, is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
And that should be a lot
Duking
of fun.
Duking it out.
That should be a lot of fun. So you guys, tomorrow at 8 a.m., game day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl. Then at 9 o'clock, Budweiser's game day sports beat. Eric, Darren, and I will be with you until 11:40 when Darren has the Notre Dame Coppin State basketball game. And so then, once the basketball game ends, the post game and everything, between 2:15, 2:30, we'll have more Budweiser's game day sports beat. We'll take you up to 3 o'clock when the Notre Dame tailgate show, the network show, begins. Then at 4 o'clock, it's kickoff, Notre Dame and Clemson in the first of two college football playoff semifinals, the Cotton Bowl in Arlington, Texas. After the game, Reggie Brooks and I bring you the Notre Dame football post-game show. I don't know how much Reggie's going to be on with me because
I don't know either.
I heard from him yesterday, and he said, hey, so my flight leaves at like 10 o'clock, so I'll be on with you.
You might be giving me a call.
That's right. I might be on for 10 minutes with Reggie, and then Evan will have to jump back in. So that'll be tomorrow. And then after the postgame show ends, we will bring you the conclusion of Alabama and Oklahoma in the other college football playoff.
What a day of sports.
Absolutely. It's great. I mean, it
set your alarm for 7:45.
It's kind of taken forever to get to this point, and now it's like, where did the time go? Here we are. We're ready for tomorrow's game.
Well, I guess you could have watched one of the 40 bowl games going on.
That is true. An exciting game last night. I can't even remember the title. The Baylor Vanderbilt game, pretty exciting last night.
The Kankakee Grill Bowl. That's what it was.
There you go. There you go. All right. So a couple pieces of big news coming out this week, Evan, that we'll start with. The Clemson defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence, sample B, came back positive. So he is definitely out for tomorrow, along with a backup tight end and a backup center. We'll get to that in a second. Let's start with Brandon Wimbush, though, because earlier this week, Christmas Eve, a national outlet broke the news that Brandon Wimbush is going to use his grad transfer to play at another school next year. So just to start with, what do you think about the timing?
Timing was weird, really weird. I'm not surprised by it. I mean, I think you know, that decision in my mind was probably made once Ian Book was named the starter. But the timing certainly was weird, where we're a few days away from them actually playing. So
right.
I don't know about that portion of it. You know, I don't think it internally will really affect what's going on. He's not the starting quarterback at this point. He is an important part of this team and helping them get to where they were. But knowing the type of leadership, including Brandon, as part of this team, I don't think it's going to be a huge distraction. I'm sure the coaching staff wasn't super pumped about it breaking
again
midweek.
The timing, yeah, because then it becomes a topic of conversation because they're down there on Christmas.
You're
going
to have
already.
To at least address it, right. And throughout media day and those opportunities too. I mean, it's going to come up. So, you know, whether or not it's a big issue, I really don't think so. It'll probably be overplayed within our realm in the media and from outside sources, not necessarily within the program. But it doesn't come as a big surprise to me.
Yeah, and so Wimbush does have 1 year of eligibility remaining. And this came up earlier in the year. We kind of talked about it when the Clemson quarterback, Kelly Bryant,
sure,
who was their starter last year, after Lawrence became the starting quarterback after four games, and because of the new redshirt rule, that meant that Bryant could transfer someplace else and have a full year of eligibility mm-hmm. to go still. Same thing didn't apply to Brandon Wimbush because he's already used his redshirt at Notre Dame. So now he still does have a year of eligibility, but, you know, the whole...
And I think that's
he
why,
wasn't going to gain anything
right.
by leaving the middle of the year.
The comparisons there of, you know, more power to Brandon for staying. I mean, that didn't
right.
really play for me. Why wouldn't you? Of course you're going to get your degree. You already have your redshirt.
Right.
You have a year where you could do a grad transfer. It all made sense. So I think the biggest... what I've been most impressed with him is he didn't create any distractions within the locker room, which winning most definitely helps. I mean, if there were any issues where there were a loss or two losses, then it could have become a little bit of a bigger issue. But when you're winning like that, and Brandon's a great kid, a good leader. I don't think that he wanted to. I mean, he wasn't going to exacerbate the issue whatsoever. You don't want to be sitting on the bench, but you do the best that you can once
right.
that decision's been made.
And I think it helped the situation that because. This did come up during the media sessions down there in Dallas, and different players from Sam Mustipher, Drew Tranquil, all talking about how, you know, everyone likes Brandon Wimbush. Mm-hmm. Wimbush has been great through this whole thing, whereas Drew Tranquil, for example, was here a couple of years ago when you had the Kaiser Zaire thing, and not that Zaire announced he was going to transfer in the middle of the year, but just the whole there was
he
a
was
lot
an issue
different,
in the locker room.
Yeah, there was a lot different dynamic because you had guys who were in the Kaiser corner and guys who were in the Zaire
plus
corner.
Then you started losing
and it doesn't
and again
help
and that blew things up, you know,
right.
even more so.
And Brian Kelly was asked about it yesterday, and while he's still saying that he tried to sort of brush it off, I guess, maybe as much as possible in his answer, but also saying that Wimbush hasn't necessarily made up his mind that he's 100% doing this, but Kelly did say that Wimbush put his name into the portal that allows mm-hmm. other schools to legally make contact and that kind of thing. So his name is in the portal. He's out there thinking about it. I mean,
I'd leave if I was
like,
him.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to play and you want to play quarterback, which it sounds like he does, because again, Wimbush was asked about it, and I mean, they all tried to tamp dance around it as much as possible. Which is, I think he still wants to play quarterback, and if he wants to play quarterback, it's not going
to
happen.
And I'm sure they were coached too to kind of tap dance around it. You don't want to make it a bigger issue than it needs to be. But for him, you know, a fresh start might not be a bad thing. He's got his degree in hand. That was one thing that was really important to him. And if you've put in 3.5 to 4 years at the University of Notre Dame, it would be very foolish to leave without that piece of paper that's going to open up doors for him. And I know he has aspirations outside of football within the finance world and the business world. So that's really important for him. But if he wants to go play, I think he can find a good fit somewhere. Maybe not at Notre Dame. I would assume, though, that Brian Kelly is probably going to try to, you know, put on the recruiting hat and keep him, because you want depth at the quarterback position. You never know what may happen. But I know for Brandon, you don't go and do, you know, this following season saying, you know, I hope somebody doesn't play well, or I hope somebody gets hurt and that's the reason why I'm playing.
Right.
You know, it'd be smart for him to explore those options if he does indeed want. And usually in a grad transfer situation, and we've seen, you know, most of the cases with the grad transfer, you're going to a school that wants you to be the starter for that 1 year, at least the situations that have worked.
Right.
The ones that maybe haven't worked have been a guy doesn't early enroll in the spring or doesn't get there in the summer, prolongs his decision, and then it becomes a bigger issue within the school. You know, the ones that have worked, the schools will grab onto the guy and say, you're our guy. Get here in the spring. Get here as early as possible so we can start to develop some chemistry. You know, Russell Wilson's a good example of that, and getting there early after he grad transferred. And then some of the ones that maybe didn't work out, the guys from Notre Dame, you know, Everett Golson or even Malik Zaire, where they kind of prolonged what that was, and then you saw some issues within the program throughout that season.
Well, and I mean, I think what it says Malik Zaire, I get, is kind of an extreme example, but he left here thinking he was going to play in the NFL. He went to Florida. None of that worked out. I think it was obvious to probably everybody but Malik NFL.
I don't think he got to Florida, though, until the fall.
Right.
His decision took so long. And that's the thing, is if you want to go play, get on that campus as early as possible. Get there if you can get there during the spring, at the very latest during the summer. But that decision was pushed so far, you know, it's tough then to make up for lost time within, you know, with the other quarterbacks.
Right.
And then also learning a new offense, too.
But I guess part of my point, but my bigger point is specific to Brandon Wimbush. If Brandon Wimbush wants to play in the NFL, it's not going to be at quarterback, so he probably would be better off staying at Notre Dame if that is his goal. As you said, he's got his degree, and that's part of why he can, or the reason why he can use the grad transfer. I mean, if he wants to go play quarterback, that's great, but I think we can all agree that if the NFL is part of his, if he wants it to be part of his future, it's not at the quarterback
position. I disagree
position.
With that.
You think he's got a chance.
What other position is he going to play?
I think he could go do what Hines Ward did and a lot of other guys have done and move to receiver or
I'm not
or,
saying
or
that he's going to necessarily be an NFL quarterback, but I think
Carlisle Holiday played in the NFL for a while.
I think he's a quarterback. I don't think that there's another position where, you know, he's gonna really take over, say I'm going to play wide receiver, I'm going to play running back. Being around him and his mental makeup and how he's built, I think that the quarterback position suits him best. And again, you know,
even a guy with that speed,
yes,
ran for 850 yeah. yards, yeah. 15 touchdowns,
yes. But the knock is, of course, you know, will he be able to complete at a high rate? And we haven't seen that.
And that's why, correct. I mean, that's why I say, yeah.
I think though that sometimes is like the easy, okay, let's put him somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, and we've said this all along, I think he can still be a really productive college quarterback.
Yes.
But I don't think that the NFL is in his future at the quarterback.
Although,
position.
You know, a fresh start at another program, that may be the light switch where something kind of clicks. You know, there's been a few quarterbacks over the course of the past, you know, 5 to 10 years that I didn't think would be great NFL fits that turned out being really good. You know, guys that weren't necessarily completing a lot of, high percentage of passes, but had the raw skills.
Right.
And then got with a good coordinator, were around some good pros who they could learn from and develop, whether it be, you know, a great NFL quarterback, learning that system for a couple of years and then blossom. That could be the case. But I think for him, you know, the next step you know, following this Cotton Bowl and then potentially a national championship. And who knows? You know, he may be used in some way, shape, or form, whether it's quarterback, whether he's playing running back or wide receiver. We don't know. We know there's a package there. But also, I mean, you look back to the SEC championship game and you have Jalen Hurts come in when Tua went down. I mean, you know, you're always one play away as the backup quarterback. So
it's like Florida State. I mean,
for us to right now to say, you know, his time in Notre Dame, you know, we're talking about, I mean, he's still got potentially two more games where he could be a big fixture. But I think, you know, what we're looking at is the long, you know, down the road a little bit more, the bigger picture. I think for him, you know, the smartest thing would be a fresh start and finding a program that can really build around his skill set, which may be a little more run than pass.
Well, yeah, and that's it. He can, by putting his name in the portal, which is really the only thing that Brian Kelly conceded yesterday, his name is in this portal, that he can go out and look for a system that suits his skills a little bit better.
Yeah. So smart move.
Yeah, exactly. So
does this portal lead to the quantum realm?
And again, it doesn't sound like it became a distraction at all with all the media sessions down there. The Notre Dame players had nothing but good things to say about Brennan Wimbush.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think anybody you run into will say that.
Yeah.
He's handled himself with a lot of class.
Absolutely. Okay, so the other big story of the week is what's going on with the Clemson players. And Eric Hansen and Tom Noy and I talked for a lot of Sports Beat last night about this, specifically what's going on with the defensive tackle, Dexter Lawrence. And then about 30 minutes after Sports Beat ended last night is when news broke.
Yeah, it was official.
Sample B is back. Sample A is what they were working off of. Sample B is back. And Dexter Lawrence, the All-American defensive tackle, Sample B came back positive for Ostarin, a performance-enhancing drug, and a backup tight end and a backup center as well. So Lawrence is obviously the most significant guy. Among the stellar defensive line group, Dexter Lawrence is the third leading tackler of this group, 44 tackles.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
This season. Yeah, he is. 7.5 for loss, 15 quarterback hurries.
Yeah, that's not bad.
As well. So just 1.5 sacks, but 15 quarterback hurries. So when you look at this, I mean, it's still going to be a tough defensive line to run the ball against, but I mean,
a little sigh of relief.
It was looking, you know, kind of like a monumental, almost like you know, as we said, I think last week, you probably got to pass first with Ian Book to try to get things going with the run. At least maybe this gives you a little bit better chance to have some success.
I don't know how much it's gonna change the overall game plan. I think you know, the recipe that we saw against USC were some screens and some draws to eliminate some of the upfield speed. I think that we'll continue to see that even with a guy like Dexter Lawrence out. But you know, no doubt that's there's a little bit of sigh of relief from this Notre Dame offensive line knowing that a guy like that is not in. But Clemson does a great job of recruiting, so you know that their second and third line guys are going to be very talented too. So you know, I just think from Clemson's standpoint, they got to be a little bummed they didn't have the Russian Olympic Committee, you know, helping them out to be able to make sure this Sample B didn't come back positive. Huh?
That's right. Do you know anything about Ostarin? Like, had you heard of it before this came out? There are a lot of.
I had a little bit in my coffee earlier this
did
morning.
You? Yeah,
I mean, it's a good thing that WSBT doesn't perform, you know, test for performance enhancers here. I know that's how you get your voice. You got a little cup over there.
That's
right.
I
know there's something in
it. You don't know what's in that, do you?
That's probably Ostarin, huh?
That's right. So from the U.S. anti-doping website, Ostarin not approved for human use or consumption in the United States.
So just for animals.
Or any other country. That's right. And
so maybe he got it eating a steak?
Well, you know, and that's what always cracks me up when you hear these guys. And he responded yesterday and said that he would never put it into his system. None of these guys.
They never know.
It's always, I have no idea how that crazy substance got into my system. None of them ever admit to it.
No, they don't. That's why just you know, we've talked about this before. If you want to take PEDs, go ahead and take them. Just legalize them all, right?
Right.
Well,
you're good with
I am good with it.
Legalize it and then regulate it, basically, is the Evan Sharp
tax
approach.
It, you know, whatever.
Right.
Well, remember, our conversation usually on this is it's like a rite of passage in the NFL to get busted for steroids.
Right.
But if you take it in Major League Baseball, you're looked at as you're ostracized.
Very true. So in any case, banned substance, not legal
Sean,
for anything.
You don't want them legalized, do you?
I'm not. I'm not big on it. You know, let's circle back to something else though. So when you were in college, were you guys tested at all?
I actually got tested a lot.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because you played two sports.
Both,
did that play a part in it?
I'm not sure. Both by the, because they're supposed to be random, right? So
right.
Both by the NCAA and both by the, and also by the school. So the school, our testing was actually more stringent, and it wouldn't just be for athletes. It was across the board. It was for all students, and they would hair test. The NCAA was urine only, and we were given a list at that time, and it, you know, it's, I think it's grown really probably even more so over the past 10 years of things that we could take, but we were suggested, it was highly suggested that we shouldn't. And part of that was you could buy a supplement from a company that may be making other supplements on the same table, and you could get trace elements of that other supplement within the one that you're buying. So, you know, we try to be pretty careful. I would say there are probably some guys that there was a fine line. Sometimes maybe you went over that line a little bit, but it was, you know, there were some guys there. And then the other guys, that they just said, I'm not going to take any of it. So it was protein shakes and things like that.
Now, did you guys get tested during the regular season, or was it more around bowl time?
It was totally random.
Really?
It was totally random, yeah.
Because I remember when I was doing play-by-play for Notre Dame baseball, it always came up when the NCAA tournament would come around, when they were in the NCAA tournament.
The NCAA was always really nice, so they'd bring us bagels and food for us to eat.
But
ones with the poppy seeds, though.
What always cracked me up is there might be one starter who was getting tested, and then there was like three walk-ons, a guy off the bench. Yeah, I mean, so you could tell that it was actually random.
I will say though, my testing went up. You know, the year that my bench press went up to like 405. You know,
right.
Squatting like mid 400s. So after that year, I had some pretty impressive gains in the weight room. I think the NCAA, they took note and they're like,
right,
we got to check out what this guy's doing.
Eric Reed, the Carolina Panther, you've heard that story, right? He's been tested like six times this year, and everyone is saying that the odds of someone like that, who obviously has got a, you know, what's gone on with some of the protesting and stuff the last couple years, that they say it's more than coincidence that one guy's
random.
Been tested six times.
But probably has a pretty strong argument for that right there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Clemson and Notre Dame, the Cotton Bowl in Arlington, Texas. And again, you'll hear it tomorrow on 96.1 WSBT. So those are a couple, the two biggest things that have come out this week. What's going on with Brandon Wimbush and the Dexter Lawrence suspension now that the second positive test has come back. Sample A and sample B being reported yesterday. We'll take a timeout, and when we come back, Evan and I will jump more into tomorrow's Cotton Bowl between Notre Dame and Clemson. We will look at some specifics regarding that game when we return. Leprechaun Lunch, we are live at Four Winds Casino, South Bend, inside the Kankakee Grill, so there's still time to stop by and grab one of the green hats like that gentleman walking out. We'll see you. Thanks for coming by. All right. He's like, what, me? Oh, he's going to sit down at the bar. Okay, good. Even better. I thought he was going to leave without stopping to have a drink. But you can stop by, get the green hats, and register to win that DeWalt radio here inside the Kankakee Grill, Four Winds Casino, South Bend. More Cotton Bowl preview coming up next, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Back live at Four Winds Casino, South Bend, inside the Kankakee Grill. All the good food is coming out right now. I can smell it, making me hungry. I don't know about you, Evan Shockley.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
I know.
I'm always ready to go.
We'll have ours soon enough. Be sure and stop out. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. You can get the free green Shamrock baseball cap. Have it in time for the Cotton Bowl tomorrow, and also sign up to win the DeWalt radio. And I've seen Brian Miller out here passing out tickets to different stuff as well. So all kinds of stuff going on out here. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley is brought to you by Curt Outdoor Living. Make plans now to transform your backyard into an oasis with the experts at Curt Outdoor Living. Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Together we can solve hunger. Learn more at feedindiana.org. By Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Matt Wilson in South Bend or Pablo Rodriguez in Granger. The Trattoria at McCree's, a unique pasta bar offering made-from-scratch pastas from old-world Italian recipes, and by Beef O'Brady's of Granger, where game time meets family time at the corner of State Road 23. Notre Dame and Clemson, college football playoff and the Cotton Bowl tomorrow, 4 o'clock Eastern time in Arlington, Texas. And, of course, you'll hear it here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, Evan Sharpley. What gives you the most reason for optimism in Notre Dame's matchup with the Tigers tomorrow?
How about an offense and a defensive conversation here, huh?
Yeah, why not?
Well, on offense, it's Ian Book. You know, okay. If he gets hot, I think, and really, if you look at both games, it could come down to quarterback play. We've got, Kyler Murray, we've got Tua involved. Jalen Hurts, might play a little bit too. Trevor Lawrence is a very talented quarterback, and Ian Book. So, you know, if those guys get hot, I mean, it can change the complexion of the game. The teams are going to have to worry about. And for this Irish defense, their front seven has been really good. Right. I think that bodes really well. But they've got some talent in the back end, too. Julian Love, almost a unanimous All-American. He was in my mind. And I just think the way that they're playing, kind of that bend but don't break, where they're trying to eliminate big plays, if they're able to do that, I think those two things, for me, have built a lot of confidence. And I don't know if the confidence has grown as the game has gotten closer, or I've just had more time to think about it. I'm not sure. All four of these teams, and I keep saying this, all four of these teams are really good. So my expectation is that these teams are going to go out there and play well.
It's interesting. You mentioned Julian Love, and Notre Dame had the media day. A little bit more than a week ago, week and a half or so.
He had a low draft grade.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah, that's right. Second round,
like second
draft grade.
Maybe later than that, too, he said.
But I asked him about being a consensus All-American as opposed to a unanimous All-American, if it bugged him, because he only needed one more, and he would have been unanimous. And his, in true Julian Love fashion, I guess he said, "Hey, I wasn't an All-American at all last year, and now I'm an All-American. Now first team in 4 out of 5." So he was kind of trying to look at it in a way that he said, "I got to think about what I got instead of what I don't have." To me, that would bug me, though, wouldn't it? I mean, wouldn't it bug you if that last one, you get the first four, and then you come down to the last one?
Would you write a letter?
Yeah, what are you going to do, right?
A nice letter?
Yeah.
Thank you for your consideration. It would have been great to have made your list.
That's right. Like the Academy Awards. What is your biggest concern, though, when you look at this matchup?
All right. For this Notre Dame offense, it's going to be containing Clemson's front four. Even sans Dexter Lawrence,
right,
is going to be a big task. How can they try to shut down the speed, the athleticism that Clemson's front four and their linebacking crew are going to throw at them? Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator, I mean, he's one of the best. There's a reason why Clemson, year in and year out, they're one of these four teams, and then also a team that's playing in the national championship game. So, how they attack that, I think, is going to be very interesting. We're going to get a good feel early on, Sean, on how that battle up front is going to go. I wouldn't say that we'll know exactly how the game is going to, how that picture is going to look in the first quarter, because Notre Dame has been so good at making adjustments at halftime. I think, though, that they're probably going to have to make some adjustments before they get to halftime. That's going to be the big key, is they can't have a quarter off. Right. And we saw that a couple of times against some lesser caliber teams. That's not an option against Clemson. And then for this defense, for Notre Dame's defense, I think playing against the speed of Clemson, how are they going to negate that? I think that their plan overall has worked as far as playing a little more blanket coverage. But if they can get to Trevor Lawrence, if they can shut down this running attack too, but if they can pressure Trevor Lawrence, you turn a very good quarterback into an average quarterback, it does change the complexion of the game, and it gives you a chance to win.
Well, this Clemson offense with Lawrence, they've got some really good receivers with wheels who can get downfield, good size, over 6'5". So it's an offense that, even though with Travis Etienne, I mean, they can run the ball.
I like
well,
him a lot.
Yeah,
he's good.
But they also like to take those shots downfield. And so that's kind of
and
the
Lawrence,
matchup, I think.
Lawrence has been one of the best this year down the field passing, too.
Right. Right. And I mean, he's still completing like 67% of his passes this year, even though he's got a lot of big shots downfield. But this Notre Dame defense doesn't give up the big shot. So, I mean, if he's completing passes downfield early on, it's obviously going to be a lot.
And my
day.
Worry, too, is if Etienne gets going, if that opens up, because you're then going to have to rotate another safety into the box if you're not able to stop the run, if you're giving up some chunk plays. So I think that is the story, you know. But how Notre Dame's defense is built, they're going to maybe give up a couple of six-yard runs to not allow a play-action pass 30 or 40 yards down the field.
Right.
But if Etienne starts breaking off some 20-yard runs, 25-yard runs, you're going
to
have to adjust and bring another guy into the box. And that would be the worry then is then some longer passes downfield.
This is Clemson's fourth trip to the college football playoff, won a national championship a couple of years ago. That while, of course, this is Notre Dame's first college football playoff appearance. So when you look at experience, how big a factor do you think it will be tomorrow?
I mean, it's definitely worth noting. I don't want to overplay it, but Clemson has a recipe. Alabama has a recipe on how to get there.
Yeah.
They know what it takes then. I think what gives them the advantage is how to prepare for it. You know, Brian Kelly has experience in preparing for playoff type of games at Grand Valley. Had a lot of success there in going through that playoff system. So I'm hoping that he'll pull from that. But certainly, you know, both of these programs in Clemson and Alabama, you know, they know how this, you know, schedule works leading up to it. So I don't want to overplay it, but they've been under these lights before. Notre Dame hasn't. So it definitely is worth noting. But I would believe that had to have been addressed by the Notre Dame coaching staff on here's how we're going to approach it.
But at the same time, when you look at what's supposed to be the most important position on the field in any given game, the quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, is a true freshman. He was playing high school football a year ago at this time. So do you think that matters, or because of everything that you talked about, the support system, the fact that the staff has been there before, pretty much everybody else has been there before, does that offset that at the quarterback?
And Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he's a special player too. I mean, let's be honest, he doesn't look like a true freshman.
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't have given him made him the starting quarterback.
And I think at this point of the season now, you know, playing 12 or 13 games, you're no longer, I don't look at him as a true freshman. You know, you've started X amount of games. I mean, you've been the guy that's gotten them to this point now. And then the other factors that you mentioned and having a staff, having other teammates and players that have been around it have experienced this already, you know, will certainly help. He'll be able to lean on them in these moments. For Notre Dame, it's we've got to ask questions of other people on how should we approach this? What should we do? You know, what is going to be our game plan as far as preparation, you know, even dating back to 3 or 4 weeks ago?
So what you mentioned, again, this is Notre Dame's first playoff appearance, but Brian Kelly, the only holdovers from 2012 when Notre Dame played Alabama in the BCS championship game are Brian Kelly and Mike Elston. Nobody else on the staff, obviously nobody on the roster, has been through it before. So what do you think that Kelly learned from that experience that obviously turned out to be just a nightmare for Notre Dame? What do you think that he learned from that he can apply to this week?
To
all this preparation and then tomorrow's
don't
game.
Schedule Bama first.
That helps.
Is
right?
That a good idea?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I think that you know, finding a good mix in how you prepare, whether it's film study, whether it's the intensity in practices, you know, I would think that there's got to be a better feel for that now, and especially in how bad that experience went in 2012. There certainly have been some changes made, and a lot of those changes, I think, that really occurred after the 4-8 season. You know, just the overall mentality, leadership, strength and conditioning,
right.
You know, mental skills, mental training, that side of it. Just really everything got a refresher. Everything had some new life in it. So I think that the perspective from 2012, I don't know if that's something that the coaching staff, I don't think that you would necessarily put that flag in front of your team, but,
right.
You know, internally, that's something that was, in my mind, discussed on what did we do well in 2012 in terms of preparation, where did we go awry, and then how can we put together a better plan here in you know, in this bowl season.
And just a couple little things, like something that he mentioned, I think it was one of his first press conferences that he had just within the last couple weeks, that they had ones-on-ones, the number one guys going against other number ones in practice because of the whole speed thing. Like, mm-hmm. if you look back at that Alabama thing, that was one of the biggest things that seemed to stood out is guys like Manti Te'o, who's supposed to be their best player, and not just him, but others, weren't ready for the speed of the game after that long layoff, which everyone faces when you're, whether it's a small bowl game or a big bowl game, you're not in game action for 5 weeks, and then you get back in. They didn't seem ready for the speed of the game. And so he talked about having ones-on-ones to kind of get reacclimated really quickly. How big a factor do you think that could be?
I think it helps, but you're still not going to – game speed is still different than practice speed.
Right.
You know, but going ones versus ones, because really during the season you don't see a lot of one versus one. You see, you know, you're starting offense against a scout team or you're starting defense against a scout team, so you can prepare from a game plan perspective more so from how fast the speed of the game is. But the layoff, I mean, it is tough. I mean, if you're playing every single week, you have a routine, you're getting in on their set and Saturdays, the game seems to slow down a little bit. Now you've taken a month, you know, almost a month off from the time you last played. You know, it's a different speed on Saturdays, but that's on both. That's both sides. I mean, that's, you know, Clemson hasn't played in about the same time as Notre Dame has. So,
but again, Clemson's been there before, and when you look at just how much Notre Dame was affected in that 2012 BCS championship game, and again, that's the past, it seems like when we look at the predictions for this game, when we look at what the point spread still is, most of the counter talk to Notre Dame has to do more with 2012 than anything specific to this current team.
It's a different team, and it's not fair to compare 2012 to this 2018 team, but that was your last opportunity
right.
in the national championship, you know, or within that realm. So, you know, I think for them to change people's minds, they're going to have to go out there and play really good football. But
right.
until that happens, I think that the last taste in people's mouth from 2012 is steering some of the conversation and perhaps why the point spread is pushing two touchdowns.
It's going the other way. I mean, are you surprised by that?
I don't know what to think, to be honest with you. I think it opened up at, 11.5. It's got up to as much as 14.
Yeah.
I've seen as well. It's kind of that 12.5 range. I don't know. I a couple of the score predictions I've seen on some sites that do predictions is like around a 45-31 Clemson victory. I mean, Clemson has averaged 45 points a game. But if there's one thing that this Irish defense has done all year, surprised you know, opposing teams on being able to shut them down or at least limit some of the points on the board. So I don't know. The 12.5, Vegas is usually pretty close. You know, I think if Notre Dame is able to put together and execute at a high level on both sides, and they win the football game, I think it'll be close. I think it'll be under a touchdown. But, you know, if they struggle and they have if they have an off quarter, this is a Clemson offense that can put up some points, and it could get to that two-touchdown range. But, again, like I said, I think that, you know, all four teams that are playing, they're all good. They should all execute at a high level. You know, if they do what they've done to get where they are, then we should have some good football.
And I'm looking right now, yeah, the current line is still 12.5. So even with the news of Dexter Lawrence yesterday, it still hasn't moved. It is It is pretty heavily toward Clemson right now. Interesting. So, all right, we'll continue to talk more about this matchup, Notre Dame and Clemson, and including, I'll ask Evan. Clemson's averaging 45 points a game,
mm-hmm.
So we're going to look at. What does the score range need to be for Notre Dame to have a chance to win tomorrow?
I do, yeah.
Yep. All right, so we're going to look at that next. When we return, we are live at Four Winds Casino, South Bend. Still giving away the green baseball caps and registering everyone for a chance to win that DeWalt portable radio. More Notre Dame Clemson talk coming up next when we continue from Four Winds Casino, South Bend, inside the Kankakee Grill, Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Chirpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Terribly in the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. I'm over here at Kankakee Grill inside. We're here at
I'm here
Kankakee
too.
Grill, Four Winds Casino, South Bend. But I was going to say, I'm over here messing around with a Caesar salad and some magnificent big jumbo shrimp cocktail, and I turn around. I'm kind of picking and, you know, having a
for
bite
for my next
or two,
magic trick.
And I turn around, and Evan's whole plate of what was...
smoked brisket tacos.
Yes, completely gone.
Yeah, now in my stomach.
Did you even dress them up with anything?
Oh, yeah,
there?
I put guacamole on it. I put some bean dip here. I still have some coleslaw, too.
That's
and some pickles.
That was a pretty impressive feat.
I've been known to impress people with my eating ability.
Yeah, that's no lie. Some quick thanks to everyone at Four Winds for having us out here. This is the second time we've been out here. Thanks to everyone who came out and from our station, Brian Miller, Jess Allen, Bob Henning, and Garrett back in the studio. Excuse me, running everything for us. So, okay, so I was teasing this before, and we're going to be announcing the winner, by the way, of who's winning that DeWalt radio here in a minute. So I talked about this before we took the break, Evan.
Tigers. You still average. Got some shrimp stuck in your throat.
I know, I do. But there's some nice horseradish down in that sauce there, too. The Tigers average 45 points a game. So is there a number you're looking at? Like, if Notre Dame holds them below 30 points,
30 is
for
my
example,
number, Sean.
Is that your magic number?
Yeah.
Okay. So explain kind of if what they, you're
if,
thinking.
If they keep Clemson under 30, I think there's like 100% chance they win.
100?
That's where I'm sitting.
Now, they've been held below 30 by both Syracuse and Texas A&M this year. They still won those games.
Those are the two games they could have lost, though.
Yeah, they could have.
Mm-hmm.
So more detail.
Well, I like Notre Dame. I like their offense and I like their ability. I think if Notre Dame's defense is keeping Clemson under 30, it'll give the Notre Dame offense enough opportunities to get over 30. So right now, you know, my score prediction, I'm looking right around like a 35-30-ish type of game. If Notre Dame is able to get into that range, I think they win. I think it's going to be close.
So you still think they can give up right around 30 even and still win?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
See, I'm still weighing this, and we always give our game prediction and final score on Game Day Sports Beat at the end, and Darren and Eric and I will still do that tomorrow. And I always get asked, especially by my family, okay, so what's your prediction? What are you working on? It's like, you know, 2 weeks ago, we're way too early for that. And I'm getting closer, and I'm kind of along the lines with you. I don't think that they can give up 30 or more, but I think if it's in that 27, 28-point range, and I don't know what difference 2 or 3 points makes, but I think that they'll have a really good chance. And I'm also still factoring in this news of Dexter Lawrence and exactly what that's going to mean, because I think that between the guards and the center matchup for Notre Dame on the offensive line, I think that's going to be a big one, where because of how good Clemson is up front and the push that they typically get and the pressure that they typically get, the disruption that they cause up front, is Notre Dame and will Dexter Williams be able to run the ball? Well, I think that they're going to have a better chance to run the ball
right
now. Now, again, they're like Notre Dame, and Notre Dame has sort of copied what Clemson, the formula they've had up front with the defensive line rotation, where it's not just you've got four main guys and you're just going at it all game. Those four front line guys have been so effective because of the other guys who are in behind them who have got a lot of experience and playing time as well.
It helps to have a rotation like that. I mean, you know, being able to be fresh in the third and the fourth quarter, but also from a development standpoint and experience and having a lot of guys that can contribute. You know, you're starting to see more programs do that where it's not just the same four guys. And also, too, I mean, you're subbing in and out based on personnel and what the offense is doing, but be able to have multiple packages, some speed packages, you know, a third down rush package, thing like things like that, I think is very helpful. And Clemson and Notre Dame have had a lot of success doing that this year.
When you look at the run-pass approach, what do you think it needs to be for Notre Dame tomorrow?
Well, I don't think you usually go into a game and say this is what it's going to be. Usually you try to get a feel early on. If one thing's working more than the other, you know, you also try to look at what the opposing team is doing too. So if Clemson is committed to taking away a certain aspect, that may totally switch what your game plan was going into it. So I think a little bit of it is going to be feeling that out. But again, and this was kind of the recipe that I talked about during the second half of the season on how to attack a quarterback like Ian Book. You know, I think Clemson, number one, they're going to see if they can get pressure with their front four. And if they can, I think you're going to see some more secondary blitzes from the linebackers or even some third level guys. You got to make him feel uncomfortable. If that's the case, it could be a loaded box. You know, there could be some play action shots downfield. You could have some one-on-one matchups. In that case, Notre Dame's receivers are going to have to come to play and make some plays downfield or in traffic. So, you know, you want to try to establish the run, but the run game to me is a very fluid thing. The run game could be swing passes, could be look passes, could be screens. We saw it against USC, some V routes to the running backs out of the backfield when USC loaded the box and played man coverage and tried to bring more pressure. That's a run to me. That's not necessarily a pass. It's sure. A run to me. So,
well, that's, I mean, the Tony Jones touchdown. Yeah. Pass. I'm
same
using air quotes. Yeah, exactly. It was essentially a long catch and run. And I think that's something with Jafar Armstrong really finally, mm-hmm. It sounds like, being 100%. Because I don't think he was ever really 100% after the knee procedure that he had. I mean, I think we're all looking that, especially when you're talking about a converted receiver, he could be a big X factor in tomorrow's game.
I'm not gonna jump to that yet because we don't necessarily know.
I mean
he could.
We'll find out when we get there.
Most definitely could be. But you know, I'm right now. I'm looking at the guys who have gotten Notre Dame there. I'm looking at Dexter Williams. I'm looking at Ian Book and Chris Fink and Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin and this offensive line. You know, these guys that have been the steady performers all year. Could there be an X factor in there? Yeah, absolutely. You know, a guy who gets an opportunity, you know, to make a couple of big plays. I might even throw Justin Yoon in there as the X factor. I mean, you know, you got to look at special teams here, too. All things considered, with two offenses that are really good and two defenses that are really good, what is the special teams play going to look like?
Can you make some field goals from more than 30 yards?
Sure.
I think you're probably going to have to make some 40-plus.
Flipping field position in the punt game or get a big return. You know, I think that those things are going to play a factor into this game as well because you have – two very talented offenses and defense.
Both
Clemson and Notre Dame.
Let me ask you this. If you're Notre Dame, you win the coin toss.
Take the ball.
Do you?
I'll take it.
Brian Kelly, I mean, that's kind of what Brian Kelly has done all along. He's always taken the ball. So you're going to stick with that even against that defense tomorrow.
I'll stick with it. I mean, I think.
And not take the ball to start the second half then.
I think you got to set the tone early, whatever that is. I mean, if your identity right now, and Brian Kelly will know this, you know, better than anybody, and he might even rely on his captains and say, guys, where do we feel the most comfortable right now? Is it with our defense going out there, you know, shutting down this Clemson offense, creating some momentum, or is it we have a really good script of plays right now with our offense where we say, okay, we can put together an eight play drive and go and score a touchdown and really really get things rolling and then hand it to our defense. So, you know, I think that I don't want to you know, go in too in depth on it. I think either way you have an opportunity to make a statement, whether it's from the offensive side or the defensive side. I'm probably biased because if I'm the quarterback, I want the ball, I want to get out there and I want to complete eight passes.
Yeah. I tend to lean to the other side where, I mean, you trust this defense. Defense has been great. Mm-hmm. They're one of two defenses in the entire country that has not given up more than 27 points in a game this season. And the fact that Clemson also has a really good defense, I would want to put my defense on the field first. And then also, after everything you go through in the first half, you get the ball to start the second half. Now, all that said, that has typically not been Brian Kelly's mode of operation. So I would think that he would stick with what he's done.
Let's flip
a coin
now
and see. That's right. All right. We've got a couple minutes here, and I'm going to announce the winner of the radio in just a second. I want to talk about Ian Book, though, real quick. Evan, how much do you think his rib injury played into his drop in – percentage and just not that he was bad by any means, but he didn't seem as sharp after that rib injury.
I guess it depends on how much ibuprofen he was taking. You know, if
only ibuprofen, right?
Not Ostarin. Okay,
that's right.
I mean, you know, it could have. You know, that's an area where it's going to be tasked. You know, throughout the course of a game and getting hit there, that's where most defensive players are usually trying to hit you if you're playing quarterback. I'm not going to overplay it a lot. I think, you know, his hot start. I mean, he set the bar so high. at that 75 to 80%. I think it was only right to see a little bit of a drop. But, you know, we're still talking. I mean, he was in the 60 to 65 range. That's still pretty good. You know,
yeah.
that's still an efficient offense. And but there are, you know, there are quite a few moments. There were some passes he wanted back, almost some sure touchdowns. You know, he'd maybe miss a wide open receiver and then throw three, you know, money balls on third down.
Right.
For him, it's going to be continued consistency. And in this moment, too, against, you know, when the bright lights are shining, are you going to be able to make those plays?
Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharply, brought to you by Kurt Outdoor Living, by the Trattoria at McCree's, by Edward Jones. Contact Sean Stevens in South Bend or Bob Borlick in Walkerton, also the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Thanks again to Four Winds Casino and Kankakee Grill for having us out here today. We look forward to being out here once again in the future. The winner of the DeWalt Radio is Jason Strahla, S-T-R-A-H-L-A. Hey, you. Hey, all right, my man. Congratulations. Sitting there with his hat, and my man Jess over there will give it to you. Okay, 10 seconds, Evan.
10.
Prediction for tomorrow?
35-31 Notre Dame.
35-31?
I went over 30.
Okay. Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat Extended Edition starts at 4 tonight. WSBT South Bend.